Welcome to the very first episode of Stop Telling Me to Relax. My name is Veronica Welch. I'm really excited to put this out there, and whoever needs to hear it, hears it and gets the message and feels seen and heard. This is a podcast about motherhood, single motherhood specifically, and the challenges, the struggles, the triumphs. I want this space to be a place where women can come and tell their stories, and anybody who's listening can relate. I'm here today with Samantha Amaya. Why don't you start and introduce yourself, just a little bit of information about you, where you're from, your age, how many kids you have, kind of the basics or whatever you want to say.
Awesome. Well, first off, Veronica, thank you for allowing me to help kick off your podcast. I am very excited for the vision that you have for this podcast and the people that it will impact. So I am Samantha Amaya. I am 33 years old. We live south of Richmond, Virginia. Right now, we've been here since like mid last year, 2024. And I've got four kids. They are 13. And then the other ones over the next like 2 months will be turning 10, 8, and 6. Goodness, that makes me feel old.
Goodness, you have your hands full. I can't even imagine four. Yeah, what's the gender breakdown? Boys, girls?
Three boys, and then the youngest is a girl.
Oh, cute. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, you are busy. Wow.
All the time. Never stops.
Yeah. And you're a single mom.
Yep.
Four kids. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, your journey to this place where you're at, being a single mom of four kids. What has led, what experiences have led you to this path?
Yeah. Well, obviously, as you know, Veronica, becoming a single mom was not something that I ever envisioned when I started having kids. And so there was a lot that happened over the years that made me realize that the relationship, the marriage that I was in was not healthy, and that it wasn't a good place to stay, and that I wasn't giving my kids a good example. And so I got married just after I turned 19. So I turned 19 in the next month, we got married. Yeah. And honestly, looking back now from the healing and then the growth that I've had, I realized that I got married because I was running away from something, from a situation in my family where I didn't grow up in a healthy way. We were in and out of foster care, lots of different abuse. My parents divorced a year before I got married, which isn't a very good indicator that I knew what a healthy relationship was in the first place.
Right.
So I wanted
to
mind
there. Real quick, do you mind sharing, was it just like drug abuse that your parents were dealing with, or were they arguing a lot that kind of maybe led to the you guys being placed in foster care?
It was a lot of like domestic violence. My dad's an unmedicated bipolar personality. Mm-hmm. Never really saw an issue. He grew up in a toxic home. My mom came from a home of different kinds of abuse, and my mom had my older brother. I'm the second oldest of nine. She had my older brother when she was 16. He was born right after she turned 16. And then she just kind of led her life through that traumatic filter into mm-hmm. our childhood. And so, we attract kind of what we are used to, what we're familiar with, what feels comfortable to us. And so that led into raising all of us similarly to how she was raised, if not a lot worse, and didn't know what to do. She had nine kids by the time she was my age right now, which is wild.
So you have nine siblings?
Yeah. So I'm eight siblings technically, because I'm the ninth.
Oh yeah. Because you're the ninth or you're in the group. Wow. That's wild. So what's the age range with their siblings? Like what's the oldest to the youngest?
My older brother is 2 years older than me, so he's 35, and the youngest he's 16 years younger than me, so whatever that math is.
Right, yeah, so he's
like 16, I guess.
But he's, 16, 17. Yeah,
I think he's 17 this month. Okay. Yeah,
wow.
So he,
that's amazing.
It's a huge range of ages.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So you mentioned this a little bit, but your childhood trauma, your parents' relationship, being placed in foster care, domestic violence, that obviously affected your decision to marry very quickly. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? like what, yeah, just elaborate that a little bit more, why you made that decision to marry, and how you really realized like, I married too quickly, I married the wrong person, and my the trauma that I've been through has really played a part in that.
Yeah, so when we met, I was in this place of like, I just graduated high school. My older brother has some physical and mental disabilities. He's like several years younger in it, mindset wise and ability to function, than I am. And so I hadn't experienced anybody else moving out, first granddaughter, oldest, you know, daughter in general. And so I didn't have anything to go off of. I hadn't seen any examples. So when I tried to go off to college and find myself and figure things out right out of high school, my mom, I think, feared the loss of the support that I gave in the home, helping with my siblings all the time. And so when I met, you know, who I, my husband, soon to be ex-husband, we're in the process of a divorce right now. But when I met him, she didn't like him at all. She hated him. And so I became like bent on proving that I could make good decisions. And so we got married very quickly. Like we met in December, got engaged in April, got married in August, immediately got pregnant because I didn't have any awareness, any education,
right,
any growth in that area at all. And I was like, well, if she doesn't like him, I went to the therapist that we had been court ordered to see and we're still seeing from before I turned 18. And he was like, your mom's not going to like anybody that that you like. And so I took that as permission to go get married. You know, I was like,
just to spite her, just to, like, you don't like him, well, I'm going to, like, make him a part of our family.
And it was back then such a subconscious thing. And then I spent the whole next, like, 12 years trying to prove that this relationship was right when it wasn't. And everything that was happening in our relationship, I was fighting for all of the wrong things until I started getting into different environments and realizing, like, this is not healthy. This is super dysfunctional. It's affecting my kids negatively. I learned this is a learned behavior that I'm passing on. And I didn't want to do that anymore. And that kind of led to the path of, holy cow, I can't do this anymore.
You are Mormon, or you practice the Mormon religion. Did that come, did that aspect of your life play a part in deciding to get married so young? Because it's my understanding that Mormons get married fairly young, between like 18 and 22, which is young for, you know, our typical American society.
It did. So being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is like the full technical name of our religion, is that a lot of times, you know, like the young men serve a mission for our church. They go out proselyting for 2 years between the ages of 18 and 25. And back then, now it's different. A lot more young women decide to serve a mission as well. But it was like, if you're not going to wait until you're 19 to go on a mission, because for girls, it was 19 or 21 back then. Now it's 19. If you weren't going to do that, and you weren't going to wait to serve a mission, then it was almost like this unspoken expectation that I believed and bought into, that you get married instead. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm supposed to get married. He loves me and I love him. And I got to prove that this is the right choice and that I can have a good head on my shoulders and know what I'm talking about and leave my home and make something out of myself in life different than how I was raised. And as long as I was doing it based on what I believed our religion said, it was okay. And I was making the right choice.
Right. Wow. I know I've never been married. I'm not current, obviously I'm a single mom, not currently married, but I have a lot of friends who got married young, for the same reasons you did, kind of like, I don't want to say just to spite their parents, but their parents, you know, they're were just issues in the family and they wanted to get out of the home. They wanted to get away from their parents. They wanted to have to stop, you know, taking childcare duties with younger siblings.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that that I think goes into why a lot of people do get married so young, especially depending on the religious faith that you come from. But in ours too, it's like, you want to have that person to be with you, and you want somebody to love you and care for you, and you want to start a life with them. And at 18, 19, 20 years old, we're still little kids, kind of.
when I look at
my oldest, and it just becomes this place where we're like, okay, so if that's what I'm supposed to do and I want to become an adult, then I better go do that.
Yeah.
And so that drives a lot of the decision and emotion behind it.
So there was like, obviously you started to realize like a shift in your marriage, or starting to realize maybe you made not the best choice to get married so young. Was there one incident that happened that made you shift into that mindset? Like, this may have been a bad decision. He's not the one for me, or I need to leave. Like, what happened? What kind of started this journey for you?
It was kind of a sequence of a lot of events over the years, just compounding on each other. It kept coming to these points where I was like, okay, this isn't healthy. This doesn't align with what I'm learning and how people should function in the world and what a healthy relationship might, you know, look like. But I never actually did leave or make that decision because I didn't want to be wrong. And I didn't want to give up on something just because I wasn't willing to persevere and work it out. And then in 2022, I think, in September of 2022, I actually got rear-ended in a car accident, like at a standstill. And I don't know if this is the path I want. I was ignoring my kids. I was trying to pretend that I had this amazing marriage when really I hated it. I was 65 pounds overweight. And I was just so miserable. I wanted to just disappear and check out a life. And then I got rear-ended on my way home from this exam that I thought it was like, I'm going to pass it. I worked my butt off. I poured my heart and soul into this. And I got the same scores the last two times I took it. Like, I don't understand what God wants for me at this point because I'm very confused. And it was really just a difficult time. And I, like, not even 2 weeks later, I had this raging headache from the accident. And my husband decided to go on vacation. And he decided to leave 3 days early, and he did not tell me that he was leaving early.
And did he go by himself, or he went with like friends?
He was supposed to go to like a men's retreat, but then he decided to book an earlier flight 3 days earlier because he just wanted to go see family. And our kids were really, really little then. And I was not, like, physically, I was not okay. I'd been sleeping 4 hours a day, trying to like be everything to everybody in every area of my life. And, I went in the day before he left to the supplement store that I kept going to, thinking that, like, as long as it wasn't prescription drugs, I was fine. Like, healthy stuff would fix my problem. Because at least I'm not doing drugs, right?
Right, yeah.
And the lady looked at me and she was like, Samantha, if you don't start sleeping, if you don't start taking care of yourself, there is nothing in here that's going to help you. You are on the fast track to never being there for your kids. You will be gone. You will leave them motherless.
Wow.
And so then when I found out like 2 days later that he was leaving, and I had no idea that he was.
So a stranger told you that? Just a woman that was working in a store?
She ran a health store that I'd been going to for a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
And she's a naturopath, and she helped us through like COVID and a lot of like different difficult things with my kids to help us navigate it. And so
you kind of had a friendship established with her already.
Yeah. And she'd seen me go through quite a bit of stuff. And I was like literally so sleep deprived. I even went to the doctor, and the doctor's like, your labs aren't good. You're significantly overweight. And I got like really upset with the doctor actually. And so I went into this lady, and she was like, from a place of love, and I could feel genuinely that she cared. So it was like this trifecta of stuff that was coming at me. And I just watched him leave. Like, the house was a mess. I was in a significant amount of pain. I was going to the chiropractor 3 days a week. And I had two kids at home. One was struggling to want to go to school. We were transitioning out of homeschooling through COVID into going to public school. And I just took pictures of him with the kids. And I was like, I had this moment of almost a disconnect from reality where I could like see in from somewhere else, like this out of body experience. And I looked at my kids and I was like, I love them and I want the best for them. And then I looked at him and I was like, you're never going to fight for me. I need to fight for me.
Yeah.
This isn't right. And I just made a commitment to myself, and I hired a high performance coach. Like, we had like no money because he came back from this trip, quit his full-time job to run his business that he had just started less than a year prior, and decided to wing it because he like had one great month and he wasn't in a healthy place in his mindset and growth either. And just kind of jumped off of a ledge, proverbially speaking. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, if you can quit your job, then I can hire somebody. And as long as the rent's paid, I will do whatever sacrifices I have to. And I hired a high performance coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost the 65 pounds in 6 months into this process from when I made this decision that to fight for me. I'd lost like 45 of the 65 pounds. And I hired a therapist. And I was like, I sat him down one day in June and I was like, I'm done. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like. I'm still very lost. I'm still very confused, but this isn't it for me anymore. And it was insane, like the longest, probably almost 3 years of my life.
So a couple of questions. You said you hired a high performance coach. Can you explain what work you did with that coach? I'm assuming it's just like exercise, but does that come with life coaching, or is it just physical?
So he's a certified high performance coach, a CHPC. If you've ever heard of Brendan Burchard, if you haven't heard of him, look him up. He's absolutely amazing. He has developed this coaching program that it's like life coaching, and it's but like on hiatus, I guess. I don't know how to properly describe it. Mm-hmm. But from a psychological researched standpoint, knowing exactly what questions to ask to extract out of people, why are you where you are? Where do you want to go? And how do you live a life you actually want to live? Yeah. Instead of just showing up and going through the motions. And it was every single week asking these questions, you know, like, where do you see yourself? What do you want in these like eight key areas? There's like 8 or 12. I don't remember specifically what number it was. And each week we'd go through a different like high performance habit that we want to work on embodying. And there was homework each week. And it was so in depth that probably like 3 months of this into 6 months of the coaching agreement, I was like, I don't know. I don't know what a healthy relationship looks like. I don't know what it looks like to actually love me. I don't know what I want my kids' future to be. I don't know who I want to be with. I don't know what I want for my business. I was like a blank slate for the first time in my life after running for 10, 11 years of, I know exactly what I want. I had to face me in like a really, really in-depth way that was honestly kind of like painful.
And it's very painful. Yeah, I've been there before. This is kind of why I'm here now doing this podcast. It's just trying to really, I feel like in a way it'll help me like process some of the things I've been through, some of the traumatic things related to being a mom or just in my life in general. And I feel like that's, I mean, I'm sure everybody goes through like a moment like this in their life, but I feel like when you have kids get married, like when you're early, late teens, early 20s, you know, like we did, like it's, you don't have a chance to figure out who you are, because you're a mom and you have responsibilities, and it's just, you don't even think about it. And at least for me, you don't think about it till you like crash and burn and you're like, I need to make my life better than what I've settled for, and you really start to dig deep. And I've just seen, I've seen that a lot with like other women who have had kids young. It's like, you gotta figure it out. You don't have the time to, and you have to figure it out. And it is painful. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of growth that has to happen, and you know, especially when we start having kids before we've really figured out who we are and how we want to show up in the world.
Right.
We lose even more of our identity because we didn't really start with one in the first place. And kids can't fend for themselves. They don't know who they are. They've never lived up to the point that we have. We have to teach them. So we get so busy teaching them that we forget that we also haven't lived up to the age that we're at either.
Right. Yeah. I the past couple of years, I really have looked at my behavior, how I think about things, how I respond to things, to things positive and negative. And I really have a mindset of like a 24-year-old, 23, 24-year-old. And that's when I, you know, had my son. And so now that I'm aware of that, or now that I've been aware of that, I just try to shift my thought process of how would a emotionally mature, emotionally available, calm, rational 39-year-old woman react to this, as opposed to like just whatever my instant reaction is. Because I feel like mentally for years I was stuck in that. I may have been 30, 31, 32, but like I was mentally like a 23-year-old. And so I really just, I've been working on that a lot. Even like when I talk about myself or when I talk about other women, I say women instead of girls. I was saying girls for a long time and I'm like, we're like in our 30s. We are women. Like, why am I calling these, you know, females, girls? We're women. We're adults, you know? So just little things like that, and just really trying to just develop and grow. And it's gotten a little easier now that my son is older, because he's, you know, more independent and whatnot. But yeah, it's a struggle. It's really hard. It's like you said, painful to go through that process and to realize it and then realize like, oh, I gotta do some work. It's hard.
Yeah. It is, like you just mentioned, when we realized for the first time, when I realized for the first time that when I was going through emotional intelligence training, that we get stuck at a certain age. That's the first time I'd ever heard of it. And I was like, no, not me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, no, because, you know, for me, like having major responsibilities young, it's like you're super responsible in so many ways. Like I would see friends that kind of were still, you know, in my 20s were still like partying and doing all these things. And I'm like, well, I'm so much more mature than that. Like I have a full-time job and I went to graduate school while having a toddler. And like, I'm so mature, but it's like, I don't know. You are mature. Like you are very, I was very responsible and very mature, but also very immature in some ways. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I've heard of the phrase, a lot of women using the phrase being a married single mom. Did you feel like that when you were married, that you were married and you had a partner, but you still, you know, you took on the 100% of the load of all the housekeeping duties and caretaking duties and pick up and drop off and all of that? I'm just curious to like, what's your take on that phrase? And if you experience, if that's what you experienced in your marriage?
Yes, I would say that a lot of times I felt that way, and there was a lot of guilt with feeling that way. When we first got married, he joined the military just after our oldest was born. He went to boot camp, and so after he was out of the military, people would be like, oh, well, if you haven't been a military wife, actually not, you know, having a spouse there, then you don't get to say that. That's not fair, even though I was. Essentially,
really?
A lot of times, because I've been in that circle. And so when I would be like, I'm really frustrated, I feel like I'm raising these kids by myself, and I go for support from a group, they would be like totally invalidating, because there are, you know, single moms, and I wasn't a single mom, who are like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And they'd say this to other people, and I'd see those comments and I'd go, okay, I don't deserve to say that. He's still physically in the house, even if he's not mentally or emotionally present, because he's not in a place to be that person for me at this point in his life, or for the kids, because he has not gone through the growth that he needs to go through. I took on everything, and I felt like I wasn't allowed to say that. That's hard to basically be married to your roommate who doesn't want to presently show up, where I'm doing everything for the kids. And the only times, like, it got to a point where I was literally like, if I wanted a break, I literally would just have to say, I hope the kids don't die. You're a physical adult in the house. I'm going for an hour. And yeah, that took me until I started working with that CHPC coach to be able to even do that. Because I was like, I can't leave my kids. I'm like basically the sole caretaker. He's just earning some money.
Right.
And even then it wasn't, you know, adequate for what we needed. It wasn't happening financially either, how we needed to be responsible adults in that area. And so when moms say, like, I feel like I'm like a married single mom, in my opinion, in my perspective, that's completely valid, because because yeah. it does feel that way. It's equally as hard, if not harder sometimes, for me at least, to have somebody in the house versus just figuring it out on my own. Right. Because I didn't want that extra body. It became this point where I was like, please go find somewhere else on this earth even in my house so I can raise the kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. And then it was just a different kind of hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, I feel like motherhood just in general, I really don't care like what your situation is, like single mom, married mom, even if you have a very involved hands-on husband, like fatherhood's different than motherhood. And it's just hard. It's just like, it just drains you. And then when you add on the other layers of being, married, but having a spouse who is just not present physically, he's there, but not, that's another layer of hard. Or being a single mom is hard when there's nobody to support you in the home. It's just such a hard experience. And I feel like, I don't know, it can be draining. Yeah, it's very hard. I would be infuriated around the house all day, like with somebody who's just not contributing, to the load of what goes on in the house. So I would be very angry all day.
A lot of times I was angry, and I was so busy trying not to be angry that I internalized it. And that's kind of where I think a lot of the weight came from, was I can't control other people. I can control me. So I'm just going to hold it all in and just bottle it up and, be the savior of everybody else and keep the peace in our home. And that's like incredibly unhealthy and very hard to undo and to not end up that way, because a lot of us do, single mom, married mom, however your situation is, like you were saying, parenting is extremely difficult. It's very, very, very hard. But, for us, it became this place where I was doing more of the work and growth. And to answer a question that you asked earlier, what kind of led to that moment was I realized when I was ready to say that I didn't want to be married anymore, that I wanted a divorce, was when I wanted him to be equally as happy as I wanted for myself, just not with him.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I realized, like, this is a healthy decision, not a hasty decision.
Right.
I'm not angry. I'm not mad. I'm not disappointed. There's still a lot of pain and stuff and trauma, for lack of better words, that I still am working through. I'm still navigating through a lot of it. It does surface. I still, have to work with the therapist to navigate that stuff, because it takes time. But when I was like, okay, you deserve to be extremely happy, super successful, parent however you want, I do not care, but I don't want it with you in the same house, in the same relationship, was when I gave myself fully permission to say, this isn't for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And then be able to begin to move forward.
You don't even have any ill will. You're just like, it's just a peaceful decision.
Yeah.
So explain where you're at. Where does your relationship stand right now with your husband? What is it like? How often do you guys communicate? Because you're still married, legally, technically still married, just not living together. So what does that look like? And how did your kids respond to separation, eventual divorce?
It was, in the beginning for the kids, it was really difficult, very confusing. They acted out. When I asked for the separation, he decided to stay in the house and then just became very internally depressed and angry because he didn't want it. And so he just became even more of like a body in the house where he wasn't physically or emotionally there. And that was very confusing for them to understand, like, does he care about us? Does he not care about us? What's going on? And then after a while, he decided that he didn't want to be in the space anymore. So he just came home one day and he was like, hey, I found a place and I'm moving in tomorrow. And then he was just gone. And because he was struggling so much with himself, it literally was like just overnight, dad's not here anymore. He didn't give a reason why. He didn't talk to them. He didn't want to have a conversation with them. He didn't want to face it. And for him, where he was struggling was he just, his coping mechanism was just to run away. Mm-hmm. And I got left with everything. And our lease was coming up and I could not afford, you know, an $1,800 lease renewal. Yeah. When I wasn't earning enough, I gave up my business when I started working with the high performance coach, and he, because he took on a business full time and was working like 20 hours a day mm-hmm. From home. And so I had to take on everything. I completely stopped all the things I was doing for me other than the high performance coach and focusing on losing weight and getting, figuring out how to make me happy. How do I get happy? I stopped everything else. And so I didn't have an income, and that was terrifying. When he decided
to
leave and wasn't contributing anymore at all for a long time. And so we found somebody in our church, in our ward that where we were going, who allowed us to live in their garage apartment, like that, an above garage apartment exterior, mm-hmm. Detached from their house, for like just like a few $100 a month. It was a huge blessing. And so we were there for a while. And it was while we were there that I was navigating these conversations with the kids, like, dad's not going to come with us. And he's not going to do that. But they were super angry. They were late for school every day. They didn't do their homework. They were getting in trouble with their teachers. They were just checking out of life. Yeah. And I had no idea how to handle it. And so eventually we got to a point where he was willing to come have a conversation with them at the beginning of the end of 2023, beginning of last year, 2024, where we finally had a conversation with the kids. We like took them out to dinner and then sat in the car and explained to them. And it had been like a year and a half since I initially had said at this point that I was done. And so they had been processing their emotions. They'd been asking questions that he hadn't been a part of. And so when we finally said it, and, you know, like I was able to relate because they'd been through a lot of like the emotional side of things with me. And I've been teaching them what I'm learning about how to handle things. And it's not their fault. There's nothing they could have done differently. It's not about them at all. We still love them very much, but we want them to have a happy, healthy home because all the fighting and the negativity and everything that was going on was not okay. And it needed to stop. And so dad and I had to live apart in order to figure out what's healthy and best for everybody. So when we did tell them, they were just like, they asked a couple of questions and they were like, okay. Like they'd already had a lot of awareness around it. So when we finally did get to have that conversation, it went a lot better. And I waited so long to tell them that, because a lot of people were like, why wouldn't you tell them sooner? Well, because I didn't feel like it was fair to just leave him completely out of it.
So he left that home and moved into another place. But you didn't tell the kids you guys were separating, or?
I told them that we were, you know, kind of like taking a break because nothing had been filed.
Okay.
And no like official commitments had been made one way or the other, because I was still like, I was mostly out, but afraid to say that I was 100% out. So I didn't mm-hmm. want to declare it because it felt uncomfortable and I still felt guilty in a lot of ways. Like I'd made peace with it, but I didn't want to say it out loud. Mm-hmm. That was a thing.
Okay. What was the response when they found out you guys are separated, you're going to get divorced eventually? Because it's always been my understanding that's a huge no-no. Well, it's a huge no-no, like in most, you know, religions, but particularly in the Mormon community, at least. I mean, that's what I see on TV, like on the Housewives and Mormon Secret Lives, the Mormon Wives. You know, divorcing is a huge no-no. They still do it, but it's a huge no-no. So what was the reaction from the church? And I guess it wasn't too bad if a family let you live in their garage apartment for a while, but.
Yeah, and I obviously can't speak for that show because I've never even watched it. I don't really watch TV or necessarily too many controversial things. In that regard, so I don't know how they portray it. Yeah,
it's,
I
thought it's really
interesting. But so I can't speak for that. I don't know how they portray it there, but it is something that is seen as like a really, really big deal just in religion in general. But also when you're sealed in a temple marriage, the way that we did mm-hmm. in our church, because that was a big deal for me back then. Like I wasn't going to get married unless I could be married this way. And so, you know, he did whatever he could back then to make sure that he portrayed the part that made me believe that it was safe to do so. And so I did. And when you're making that decision, it's like, you know, it's hard and you don't want to say it, but he hadn't really been showing up for church anyway, a lot of the times, because he had his own battles with religion. And so they knew me, they knew the kids, they'd seen him sometimes. And my bishop was very supportive when I went to him and talked to him. And I was like, I'm going to need support. I've weighed this out very heavily. He was on board. He'd seen some of the deep, deep troubles that we'd gone through and the trials that we'd faced and how he handled it, what I was doing to do my part. And he was in full support of it. He was the first one to be like, you know, what can we do to help you be in a healthier, safer place? And like, he helped me to get a therapist and used the funds from our ward to cover it because I couldn't financially do it. And they were just so gracious. There were those people who, you know, maybe they never straight up said that they thought that it was like, you know, almost like you have like a disease or something. They were like, if you come here, we will do everything we can to support you. And I dug my heels in and I was like, I'm not going to Virginia. We're established in Georgia. And I didn't want to come to a new place where nobody knew me. And, you know, as like a single mom, like, here comes the struggle, kind of a mindset that I thought I was going to walk into. And for the most part, like, it's, you know, any issues I think I've really had out here were probably in my own head a lot of times, my own doubts, my own, you know, insecurities. That, but like at church, you know, I constantly find myself like so grateful that we did come here, because the young men are like buddies with my son, my oldest, and he has friends, like real, true, good friends that understand him and accept him, and their parents let him come hang out, and they play with the younger kids after church, and the adults have been great and inclusive. And so it has been different than, I know a lot of people don't experience it in the same way that I have. I've seen people who've felt very chastised by members of the church where they live. And I, for the most part, I've really worked on myself to try to make sure that is it them chastising me for my choice to embark on this path that I feel is healthier and wiser and better for the future? Or is it actually, you know, me? Me or them?
Right. Yeah, I realize that. I still do a lot of that. But I was talking to a therapist like a couple of years ago and saying how shame that I feel around like just kind of some things that were going on in my life, like being a single mom and feeling like people look down on me. And she's like, has anybody said that to you? And I'm like, no. And she's like, well, how have they treated you? Like, they're looking down on you. And I'm like, well, there hasn't really been anything that I can define, like, would think that that's mistreatment. And they think they're looking down on me. And she's like, it's all in your head. Like, you're just creating that narrative in your head. That's not the reality. And so that was a big moment for me where I always check myself when I feel like somebody's judging me or looking down on me or just being negative. Like, are they really being negative, or am I just creating that thought in my head because I am uncomfortable with where I'm at right now, or this is a hard, or I'm in a hard place, and I'm struggling. Having that self-awareness is really important. It's been like life-changing for me.
Yeah, it's not easy to get there though. So like, if somebody's listening or watching this and they're like, how do you get there? Or, you know, I'm never going to get there. Like, it just takes time.
It takes time and like surrounding yourself with the right people that will kind of sort of like check you like that, or like call you out. Like if like a therapist or just like a girlfriend, you know, that would be like, you're creating this in your head. That's not exactly what's really going on. Just having that community, whether wherever it is, coworkers or people within your church community, that's very important. So what does life look like now? You are separated. I'm assuming your husband is in another state, so he's living in still in Georgia and you're in Virginia. You are completely taking care of the kids on your own. So what does that look like? I know you homeschool, so just tell us a little bit about your life now.
Now we live in Virginia. He lives in South Carolina. I have been extremely intentional to work on my part of how can I help us to co-parent effectively for the kids in a way that sets the right boundaries for myself. And he has started to be a little bit more present. Still not easy. Still a lot of hard things going on. The biggest reason, honestly, if I'm like, this is like a locker room conversation. With having these thoughts of like, oh my goodness, people are actually going to hear like the real story, and that's nerve wracking. But it's okay. He does help out a lot now as far as like financial stuff goes, and he comes up like every month or two as he can to spend the weekend with them. It's just easier for him, for his work and what he wants to do. He lives there. We get to do what we want here. He supports my decisions and weighs in, and I, do my best to be considerate, and he's considerate of me. It's a lot healthier than it used to be. There's still a lot of growth to go in that area. We're still defining how things are going to look long term. And eventually, like living in two states, I think something if I could go back and do was I would have filed for divorce while we were in the same state together, because now it costs significantly more to draw up
Oh,
the
really?
paperwork. Like a lot of people want, a lot of attorneys just to even make sure that the paperwork's done right in two different states and two different jurisdictions. And each state is very different. They don't have similar laws between our states at all for how things should be. We're talking like $10,000-$15,000 just if
Oh
we're
my goodness.
completely amicable and agree on everything. And so for now, financially, our focus is how do we pay down the debt that we racked up making stupid choices when we were immature through our marriage? How do we make sure the kids are fed, because the cost of living is outrageous right now? And I tried to work a job out here and have a babysitter, and I was basically paying the babysitter $5 an hour more than I was earning. So I went back to the drawing board,
That's
and I,
pointless. Yeah.
yeah, okay, how do I focus on my skill sets and like the 15 years of business experience that I have? So he helps above and beyond what even a court would say he has to right now.
Well,
So
that's good. What do you think was the shift for him? Do you think he had some sort of realization like, oh, I'm going to ruin my relationship with my kids if I don't step it up? Or what do you even know what made that shift for him?
some of the shift happened, honestly, in August of 2023. We had just moved out of our place into that above garage apartment. The school was upset because I wasn't meeting state requirements. Like they were late, they were fighting at school. They like not really fighting with other kids, but just like fighting against doing what they were told to do, and a lot of issues. And we had taken the previous year some time to go see family and whatnot, and so it got to a point where I couldn't keep my head above water anymore. And I was like, okay, I can't make the school understand. I can't make my kids behave, because I'm not going to beat them into submission. That doesn't work. And I can't navigate this on my own. And he had started deciding to separate everything financially and didn't have any realization that I had no ability to function on my own. Like he wasn't seeing them, he wasn't visiting, he was just like extremely depressed. And I literally was at a breaking point where I literally was driving down the road, and I looked at this long line of trees in the car, and I just had the thought of, what if I just let go of the wheel because he has money and he can care for them and I'm doing a horrible job? And I decided that it wasn't worth living anymore because I wasn't a good enough mom. Clearly, I had failed somewhere miserably enough that it didn't matter. And I
Stopped you from
quit.
doing it.
I did a lot of coaching with my high performance coach and Brendon Burchard. Like I attended all of his events, and I heard him say in my head, from all of like the programming that you get in trainings like that, you don't actually want to die, you just forgot how to live.
Ooh, I like that.
And I was like, okay, but I'm crying so hard I can't see straight. I finally got to like an empty parking lot and I called the suicide hotline. And he was back in Utah visiting family, which I didn't even know he had left. I had no idea he was even out of state while I was going through all this. And so I tried multiple like outpatient centers. I drove myself everywhere that I could within reason before the kids got out of school. And everybody was like, you don't have money, you don't have insurance, you don't have anybody to take your kids. We can't help you, and turn me away. And I was not okay at all. And I was just trying to find some reason to not quit. And so I got my kids from school. I went home. I was like just completely zoned out. The next morning I got them to school. The suicide hotline called back to see if I'd found anything, and I hadn't. And so I decided that in 107 degree Georgia weather, I was going to go to a lake and I was going to walk it out. I was going to walk around this lake in the middle of nowhere until my racing thoughts stopped and I couldn't think anymore, because then maybe I could find a solution.
Yeah.
And so I texted him, asked if he was back, and he said, yeah, I got in this morning. And I said, great. Here's where the car is. You know where the kids go to school. The keys for everything are in the car, and don't come find me. And I turned my phone off.
Wow.
And
that's a bold move. That's such a bold move, I feel like. But I feel like things don't change until we like have those breakdown moments and people really realize like, she needs some support. Yeah.
Yeah. So he ended up, we only had one vehicle because our van wasn't able to be driven for like a year. And so I had his car and he'd just been doing like Ubers and transport up in Atlanta where he'd been staying at the time when we were still in Georgia. And so he Ubered to rent a minivan and went in, came and was searching for me. And I saw like through the trees that he was looking for me. And I was like, now you want to help me? Good luck finding me if I'm even still here by then.
How did he know you were at that lake?
It was kind of a remote lake.
Oh, okay.
And so he just figured I probably hadn't gone far from where I left the car.
Right.
Because my responsibility to the kids is great enough that he figured I probably wouldn't actually go past when they got out of school because my phone was off. How would I know if he actually went to get them?
Right.
And even if I couldn't physically function and I could barely drive, I would still make sure the kids got picked up because I don't know how to let them fend for themselves. Like I would never do that.
Right. Yeah.
But if I thought that he had them, if I thought like the car was gone, okay, I'm good. Like they're safe. I can be done. I might have come to that point because I was just in that kind of a headspace at the time, you know, like it just was really unhealthy. And he found me right at the point where like I probably would not have been here if it had gone probably another hour. It was so hot. I was so dehydrated. I hadn't eaten or drinking in 4 days because I just couldn't handle things. And I literally like I just completely gave up on myself trying to make everybody else get off my back and stop telling me how I was failing. And it was after that that he kind of started to come around a little bit more and realized that things were bad. And then we moved out here to Virginia. We were staying with somebody in their garage apartment, a friend of our friends. And when they needed the apartment back for their daughter and son-in-law, I had nowhere to go. And it was, you know, he was doing fine. He had his needs met. And I just called him one day and I was like, I don't know what you have to do, but you need to keep a roof over these kids' heads. And I don't ever want to get to the point again where I want to commit suicide. Yeah. And so I need you to step up because that's kind of where I feel like I'm headed if I don't get some breathing room. And he's been a lot more supportive since then.
Yeah. You know, I feel like a lot of men lack the communication skills. So like, you really have to just be very blunt and like, this is what I need. This is what you have to do. And maybe we want them to realize this is what they need to do, or see that we're struggling and just automatically help. And like some, in my experience, some men just don't operate like they don't operate like that. They need to be told very bluntly, like, this is what you need to do.
Sometimes like there's a lot of growth that we don't get to decide. And also some of like the programming and wiring that they have from their past or whatever it is, that a lot of them are like that, you know. And it's not necessarily like he gets to be however he wants to be, I get to be how I want to be, and I get to be grateful for the help that he's given, and we still get to move towards the path of being able to financially get where we want to go and be there for the kids. And right now I think that's our biggest focus, is how do we make sure the kids are good?
Yeah.
And if I'm good, then he knows that I'm more likely to make sure that they're good. And so he's doing what he can, because that's what's best overall.
Yeah, pretty awesome. So let's talk about your kids. I want to talk a little bit about your kids. I just want, like, let's get to know them, or, you know, tell us as much as you want about them. So you have four kids. So what is your favorite thing about each of your kids? Either like their a favorite habit they have, a personality trait, a talent. What are they like?
Each of my kids is so awesome. It's hard to choose just one thing about each of them. Like, I really do have great kids. My oldest, Ethan, he'll be 14 this summer. He catches on so quick. He's so smart, and he's so selfless and loving. You know, I mean, he's a teenager, so he's got all those teenage things going on. But at the end of the day, like, I know that I can count on him to be there and to be helpful and to do what he's able to, and still be a kid, still be a teenager, still have a life, as he should. But when it comes to the things, he's been there for everything, you know. Like, our firstborn is like the one who grows up with us. People say that all the time. It's so true. And so when it comes to the leadership development, he spent his entire life listening to trainings with me and going to events until he got older and wasn't able to always go with me. And so he just picks up on stuff, and he's very self-aware. And so that's such an awesome trait that I love that he has. And then Connor, he'll be 10 in a couple months. He's like a mama's boy. He's just so cute. He's my rainbow baby. I had one in between my oldest and him that didn't make it. And he's just like such a blessing. He's very good at art. He draws comics. Very impressive.
Oh, awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. And Spencer is turning 8 next month. He's super spunky, super athletic. He's the first to serve. He's just got a heart for other people. And at church, he's the first to volunteer for everything. Like, put me in, coach. I want to do it. He even steps in for some of the teenagers and stuff. He's like, their responsibilities to take care of the church and stuff. He's like, I don't see them moving fast enough. I'm going to do it for them. And they're like, okay, you have to let other people have responsibility.
Right, but yeah.
They find ways to include him and help him to feel that, like, just really inclusive, and it's really cool. And then Elizabeth is my youngest. She'll be 6 in a couple months, and she's just like, she's a spunky little redhead. 3 of them are redheads.
Oh, cute. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I
love, so I've got red. 3 fiery redheads. They're the cutest things ever. And she knows what she wants. She is the boss of her brothers, even though she's the baby. And
runs the show.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She definitely does. Sometimes it's a challenge, but she's the cutest little thing.
Awesome. Oh, okay. What, when you're feeling overwhelmed with motherhood, with life, work, you know, we all have a lot on our plate. What is your most useful coping skill? What's the thing that really helps you to calm down?
One of the things that has helped me the most, when we were in Georgia and they were in school, I would just, you know, like, I'd drop them all off, and then I'd have like a couple hours when Lizzie was in preschool, I'd have like 4 hours. And when I couldn't handle it anymore, I would go sit by a lake. So when we moved out here and I couldn't just go sit by a lake because we chose to homeschool, I turned half of my closet into a war room. So if you've ever seen the movie War Room,
I've never seen it. What?
You got to watch it. It is so good. A war room is basically like a dedicated space where nothing else gets to be. And you just kind of go to battle against all the things in your life with God. I'm like, hey, God, like, we're going to pray about this. We're going to put this in your hands. We're going to give it over to you. And I have cards in there, like 3x5 little note cards on the wall about things I'm praying about specifically. And sometimes, honestly, I just go sit in there when like I'm really frustrated and I'm extremely overwhelmed. The kids know that if they like, they'll literally come in to the closet looking for me and they'll open it. I'll look at them. They'll look at me. They'll close it and they'll leave because they know like.
They know. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And if they're feeling overwhelmed. Yeah. If they're feeling overwhelmed too, then they'll just like come back after like 5-10 minutes and they'll just come sit next to me and we'll just sit there. So it helps them sometimes too. They're just like, that's it's awesome. Almost like this unspoken thing where they ask to come in and I don't have to say anything. If I'm not ready and I can't handle it, I just like, or I say 5 or something and they know.
Yeah.
And you can have a turn.
I love that. I'll have to check out that movie, so in this movie, is the war room like what's that movie about? Like, just give a brief synopsis. I'm just curious. Like,
that happened. Yeah. The war room itself, the movie is about a married couple who is on the brink of divorce, and she's like a successful realtor, and he's
Scarlett Johansson.
It might be. I don't.
I think I've heard of that, and they're arguing a lot in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I know some lady that she's trying to sell a house for teaches her to battle in a war room to, you know, like if God wants your marriage to be saved, he'll save it. If he doesn't and he wants you to be somewhere else, then that's what will happen. But you got to give it up. Yeah. You got to stop trying to control everything. And that's kind of like my room where I just go to stop trying to control everything, because as women, we want so badly to have control.
Yeah. Control. Yeah. Over everything. Yeah. Everything has to be perfect. Or at least for me.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'll check out that movie. I need to create a space like that in my house where it's just like, there's no electronics. I can take a book and just sit and read or do that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's very cathartic for sure.
Yeah. What podcasts do you listen to? What books, or have there been like any, resources from the media that have like, you know, helped you throughout this journey from married to separated, eventually divorced, single motherhood?
I really like the book, The Big Leap. It's got like a fish jumping from one fishbowl to another. That was like the first one that ever gave me awareness that I had the choice to change and that I was manufacturing a lot of the problems in my life. So I refer back to that one a lot. I listen to Brendan Burchard's Brendan Show podcast when I can. And then I have two different apps for like scripture study on my phone that I turn to as well. And those help me a lot. And those are kind of like the main things.
Yeah. I have that on my phone too. It's so helpful.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
So last question is like, what is your best piece of advice for I don't want to even say like a new single mother, but just a mother, a new mom. What is your best piece of advice if you want to center it around a single mother leaving a marriage? Just give your best piece of motherhood advice.
The best piece of advice that I was ever given and that has applied through every single stage of parenting in whatever facet is going on in my relationships externally outside of being a mom was that if you choose not to take care of yourself and selflessly sacrifice yourself for everybody else, you've essentially sacrificed everybody else.
Right.
And what that means, if you've never heard that and it doesn't quite make sense, is you have to. So one of my friends teaches, Sam Wilson, she teaches the overflow effect. And so she has a cup, like a hot chocolate mug or a coffee mug, whatever. And you can pour and pour and pour and pour, and it will overflow and just drip everywhere else. That's like excessive self-care. Mm-hmm. And you forget about everybody else. And then there's the, I'm not going to pour anything into my cup until everybody else's cups are full. But then, you know, there's nothing left to pour and you have an empty cup.
Right.
What about you? Like, now you're just staring at a cup, like, you know? There's nothing, you can't take care of anybody else because you sacrificed everything. And so how are you supposed to now have the energy to show up for somebody else? How can you take care of your kids if you're empty? How can you show up for your relationships, for your business, for your job, whatever it is? If you're like that. And the overflow effect is like, how do we find a healthy balance where we can pour into our own cup and then the saucer underneath it kind of catches it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
And it like, it captures the overflow. Mm-hmm. And then when you start to feel empty, you can take the saucer and pour it back in. Yeah. So you never truly run out if you're always thinking about that. So you don't want to excessively care for yourself, but you don't want to not care for yourself at all so that you can be the best you. I wish somebody had told me how important it was to take care of myself as a new mom. Yeah. Versus waiting until I'd had four kids to realize like you're a hot mess in the worst possible way and it's not
right.
Fun.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think it's key. I think there's so much out there about self-care and it's so important, but it's also like self-care is not just like, oh, make sure you know, go get a massage or go do this or that. It's mm-hmm. like really having the time to get in touch with yourself. Having that time to sit in your war room and just be silent or exercising, making sure your finances are all in a row so then you can hire somebody that can work out with and get you in shape. And, you know, it's a lot deeper than I think like how self-care is sometimes portrayed like on social media. I mean, all those massages and getting your nails done, those are nice. But like sometimes you have to really do those, be very intentional, really do some digging and like, what do I need to just like keep my spirit going? What do I need to do and find it and hopefully get a grasp on taking care of themselves before they hit a rock bottom.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm so glad that we've had a chance to talk and just to meet. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.